Welcome to High Truths on Drugs and Addiction, where national experts bring you facts and answer your questions. I'm your host, Dr. Onit Lev, an emergency and addiction doctor who has served at the White House and still practices on the front lines. Right here on High Truths, you will learn from experts from around the globe and around all aspects of drugs and addiction. Today's episode is sponsored by ISAC, the International Academy on the Science and Impact of Cannabis. Visit their website at isaac1.org, I-A-S-I-C-1.org, to follow the science on marijuana. Friends, fentanyl is plaguing America. There is no safe drug supply unless it comes from a legal pharmacy. If you are around anyone who may be using drugs, you should carry naloxone, the opioid reversal agent. Carrying naloxone for drugs is like carrying an EpiPen for allergies. Come visit me on hightruths.com to learn more about the show, submit a question, or download a free prescription for naloxone. Hello again, High Truth listeners. Get ready for a stimulating episode. I'm your host, Dr. Onit Lev. And what is more stimulating than the illicit stimulants such as methamphetamines? In California, the West Coast, and heading east, methamphetamine is wreaking havoc on our society. Methamphetamine eats away at the brain, literally poking holes in the brain as seen on the PET scans. It eats at the skin with abscesses and ulcers. It eats the teeth with methamphetamine mouth, and it eats at the heart, causing congestive heart failure. Methamphetamine is associated with mental health crises such as suicide, psychosis, and violence. The San Diego Methamphetamine Strike Force and Medical Examiner report over 700 deaths a year from meth. Our San Diego Emergency Department drug surveillance data shows 76% of all urine drug screens, while collected, were positive for methamphetamine. 76%. That's insane. Methamphetamine is pouring into the United States nonstop, available in high potency and low price. The supply is out of control. To make matters worse, we have no medications to treat methamphetamine overdoses or methamphetamine use disorder like we have for opioids. And with that, let's hear our question of the day.
Hello, Dr. Lev. This is Nicole Martinez. I've so enjoyed working with you for the last 17 plus years. I've especially enjoyed how you've managed motherhood and career and followed your footsteps. As you know, I'm a dual board certified family and emergency nurse practitioner, but I'm also a clinical associate professor at the University of California, Irvine. In addition to that, I'm the program director for the Doctorate of Nursing Practice program. My question is about methamphetamine. There is no current medications that treat meth poisoning, yet we see more meth poisonings than fentanyl in Southern California. Is there any drug development for meth in the future? Thank you for your insight and knowledge. I appreciate everything that you do.
Thank you, Nicole, for your question, and thank you for all you do for patients in the emergency department and teaching the next generation of nurse practitioners. You have a full, amazing career, and you are also an awesome mother, and I'm so proud of you. To answer your question, I invited a physician working on new drug development on methamphetamines, Dr. Brooks Gentry. Dr. Gentry is an anesthesiologist and professor at the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences. He is working on an anti-methamphetamine monoclonal antibody for patients with a methamphetamine use disorder. To learn more about Dr. Brooks Gentry, please check out the High Truth show notes. Dr. Gentry, welcome to High Truths.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
I'm excited to have you. And Dr. Brooks, tell us, how does an anesthesiologist who went to medical school become an expert in drug development? And keep in mind that I have two daughters who want to be anesthesiologists, and I think that what you do is really cool.
Outstanding. Well, glad to hear that. It's a great field. I did a fellowship in an area of study in which I learned about and studied about drugs that move rapidly throughout the body and drugs that act rapidly in the body. Anesthetics work that way. It turns out that they're very similar in their time of action to substances of abuse, particularly methamphetamine. And after I did a fellowship studying these processes after my residency in anesthesia, and then when I moved back to Arkansas to start my career, I connected with another scientist who had developed antibodies against angel dust, fencyclidine. And we can talk about antibodies, but basically this is, he was doing things to change the time course of these rapidly acting drugs that worked on the brain. And where I had just studied this, spent 3 years studying these processes. And so we connected and we decided we would start working together. And then we realized that Arkansas in the mid 90s was number one in the United States in the per capita number of methamphetamine labs. And so we decided that that was a target that we should go after to try to help. And so we did. We started writing grants from NIH for development of monoclonal antibodies against methamphetamine and got our first funding for this in about 1997.
Wow. So you've been working on this for a long time.
We've been working on this for a long time. Yes.
So I have a question from Nicole. Nicole Martinez is a nurse practitioner I work with in the emergency department. And she is asking, she's also a professor for nurse practitioner students. And she wants to know if there are developments in the horizon for medications to treat methamphetamine use disorder.
Well, yes, there are. Ours is an approach that in which we give doses of an antibody, a medication that will bind methamphetamine in the bloodstream and keep it from exerting its action in both in the brain and in other parts of the body. And so we're doing human trials now with this medication. There are a number of other types of approaches that are being tried, most of which are using existing medications, antidepressants, anxiolytics, and other medications to try to help deter and mitigate some of the side effects of methamphetamine withdrawal and to mitigate some of the cravings of methamphetamine. There's nothing past what are called phase two trials for methamphetamine at this point. There's just not a lot out there that has been successful. The most successful treatments for methamphetamine have been behavioral therapy, talk therapy, cognitive therapy, in which hopefully you can get improvement in people's methamphetamine use disorder in about 15% of patients. So it's not a lot of work going on in this area right now that's been successful.
But there may be hopes on the horizon. Let's talk about, again, behavioral therapy is important, but as a drug developer, I thought we'd have a conversation about drugs. So drug options. So we know about opioids and using agonist therapy, and that means a drug that is similar to the drug. So for opioids, there is methadone, which is the same. It's an opioid that you use to treat opioid use disorder. Is there a possibility of doing the same thing with methamphetamine? So using high-dose Adderall or Vyvanse to treat methamphetamine use disorder, just like we use methadone to treat opioid use disorder?
I'm glad you asked. It's a very difficult thing to do to use a drug like Vyvanse or Adderall to act on the same receptors where methamphetamine does, like we do with methadone for opioids. And the problem is that if we block the effects of those receptors, those are the same receptors and nerves that we require to live and to function. So these are all, it makes it very difficult to develop a medicine that actually binds to and blocks the receptors that cause the effects of methamphetamine, because it would block and it would bind and block the effects of that we need to actually function. Our nerves and the chemicals that are used to give chemical messages between our nerves would be blocked, and it wouldn't work very well, and we couldn't work that way. It couldn't function. And so our approach has been to actually bind methamphetamine in the bloodstream and keep it from getting to its sites of action in the brain and other nerves. And so that's one of the reasons that we've chosen this approach, because it's going to be virtually impossible to develop a medicine like we use for opioids for methamphetamine, just simply because of the way methamphetamine works.
So I want to talk about your approach with monoclonal antibody, but I want to understand better what doesn't work also. So you're saying there is no such thing as a naloxone for methamphetamine, because if there was, we would feel like dying because it affects, it blocks it, the dopamine receptors to the point where I wouldn't want that.
Exactly.
Okay. So that's why there's no naloxone for methamphetamine. But what about the Adderall idea? Is that just because it's too much?
Yeah, it's been tried, and it's not, as far as I know, it hasn't been terribly successful, because there's still a problem with people getting a little much and a little too high and a little, and it's just not as, it's not a, it doesn't block the effects. It actually is, it will substitute for those effects a little bit, but it has not been proven to be successful like methadone has, for instance. Right. It is tried, and people are still, there is some work out going on where they are modifying molecules that look like methamphetamine to try to interact with those receptors to both block and allow them to work more normally, but don't allow the high that is so reinforcing for methamphetamine. That's the problem with meth, is it is so reinforcing the way people, when they smoke it or take it IV, the pleasurable effects are so great that it becomes very addicting. And so that's a big problem with it at the moment.
Okay. So your approach as chief medical officer of Intervection, did I say that right?
Intervection,
chief medical officer of Intervection, is to prevent the drug from entering the bloodstream?
No, it's to prevent it from entering the brain and other sites of action. It will enter the bloodstream, but our antibody, our medicine is not unlike you. Many of your listeners have probably heard about COVID antibodies and how those have been used to bind and treat and take COVID away and take it away from its sites of action in the lung and other places and bind it and let it and take it out of the body. Our medicine works similarly to that. It basically sits in the bloodstream and binds methamphetamine to keep it from getting to its sites of action in the brain. And so it reduces the pleasurable reinforcing effects of methamphetamine. And so this is it. We do know that it changes the way methamphetamine moves in the body, and our hypothesis is that effective doses of our medicine will reduce the reinforcing effects of methamphetamine.
So the new drug is a monoclonal antibody to methamphetamine, similar to the monoclonal antibodies that people used for COVID. But what is a monoclonal antibody?
Monoclonal antibody is a molecule that is produced by your body to fight infection and to fight foreign substances. Your immune system creates these antibodies against bacteria and viruses. Innately, it's what you use to get over a cold or flu, even if you hadn't had a flu shot. And so it's your body's own innate defense mechanisms against foreign molecules. We have been able to create these molecules in essentially in a test tube, but they only bind methamphetamine, ecstasy, or amphetamine.
Okay, so they're created in a lab, and then they work to encase that methamphetamine and preventing it from working on the brain.
That's exactly right.
Now, if I'm thinking about the monoclonal antibodies that we gave to COVID, and I used to give that in the emergency department, we no longer do that anymore because it's no longer effective. Is that the same thing that's going to happen with the a methamphetamine drug?
One of the nice things about our medicine is it will last, we think, at least a month after a single dose. And so what our plan is, and what we're testing in a human study right now, is that we're giving monthly doses of our antibody combined with cognitive behavioral therapy for a 6-month course of treatment. We think that treatment over that period of time will allow the individual to learn new coping mechanisms and to hopefully develop other motivations whereby they can reduce their meth use or even stop it altogether. So we hope to overcome that duration of action issue with a long-acting antibody given once a month for 6 months. One of the other areas of research that we're working on right now is actually developing an antibody that may last up to 3 months with a single dose. And so that would improve compliance because the patient would only have to take a dose of our medicine either every month or every 3 months, but also would prolong the duration of action of our medicine.
So when you get that, the drug, it's an infusion or a pill? Yeah.
No, it's an IV infusion. Okay. Right now we're giving it over about 30 minutes, but we think that we may be able to give it a little quicker than that when we actually get to the point where it's approved for more widespread use. It has proven to be very safe so far. I think we've given our medicine to about 90 different people, and it's had a very, very good track record for safety at this point.
That's great. And is it a blood product? So when we gave IV infusion for the COVID antibody, it was considered a blood product. So is it the same kind of principle?
Great question. No, it's not. These with modern engineering techniques, modern medication development techniques, the antibody, it's just the antibody itself in a salt solution. It's actually very safe, has no components of any blood components in it at all. And it's really, and one of the nice things about it is it only binds the three things that I mentioned, meth, amphetamine, and ecstasy. And so it doesn't bind anything else. And so that improves its safety profile a lot.
And so if you look and read about monoclonal antibodies, they come from injection of a stimulant to a mouse of a rat. So there's or a rabbit. There's no mice or rabbit DNA in this drug.
In ours, no DNA, but the part of the binding component of it actually is a rat protein. But there is there are a lot of monoclonal antibodies that are given to humans that are like that right now. It's called a chimeric antibody. So it's 2/3 human and 1/3 actually mouse. The commonly prescribed antibody for cancer therapy, rituximab, is an example of that. And it's one of the most commonly used antibodies in the world for its indications. And so
tell us about that drug a little bit, Sid.
Rituximab is it's a monoclonal antibody that's used for a variety of cancers, lymphomas, I think some GI cancers, and it is very commonly used as an adjunct for other types. I think I saw recently that it's being used in combination with some personalized medication against. No, it was a different one. Sorry. It's used in combination with other chemotherapeutic agents. I'm not an oncologist, so I don't know a lot about it, other than it is very similar structurally to our medicine. And we use we've studied the side effect profile of it. And it is very safe because and ours is a lot like that.
Right. So your drug is called IXT-M200, right?
IXT-M200. That's correct. Right. That is its current name. We're in the process of finalizing the generic name for it, but we're not ready to roll that out right now. We almost have it, but we don't quite yet. We've got one more approval step to go through to get the generic name actually approved. So it will not be on the market as IXT-M200.
You know, I'm just fascinated with the naming process. So who came up with IXT? Like, what does that come from? An M200, is that like your 200th time you tried to do this?
No, it's funny. It's kind of morphed. I mean, originally the actual, you mentioned earlier that monoclonals are formed by injecting a rat with something to create antibodies. And in the cloning process and the way in the process of developing this, there were these plates that had wells in them. And this particular antibody, we had like hundreds of these plates. And this particular antibody came from the seventh plate in this series, row F and column 9. And so it was called MAB, monoclonal antibody, 7F9. And that was when it was all a rat molecule. And then when we made it into a human molecule, we renamed it and we called it IXT for intervention, M for monoclonal antibody, 200, because it was actually the second type of medicine we'd made against methamphetamine. The first was actually a vaccine, and that series was V100. And so this one was M200 because it was monoclonal antibody second series. And so when we get to the longer acting monoclonal antibody, I think that one is IXT-M201.
Interesting. So wait, what happened with the vaccine? Tell us about V100.
Well, we actually think we have a very good vaccine. The people that we work with in the NIH, who have been just phenomenal for years, preferred that we work more on the monoclonal antibody approach. They felt like for methamphetamine that would be a better way to go. And so we stopped development on the vaccine about 3 years ago. I do think it could be very effective.
Tell us what is the difference? Like, I mean, we all get COVID vaccines and people got the monoclonal antibody when they had the disease, but maybe explain to us the difference especially for meth. What's the difference between a vaccine for meth versus monoclonal antibody for meth?
Well, it's very similar to the COVID vaccine versus the COVID monoclonal antibody. The methamphetamine vaccine, you give it to a human and they create their own antibodies against methamphetamine. Just like when you take a COVID vaccine, you create your own antibodies against COVID. The monoclonal antibody, we have just gone ahead and created those antibodies in a test tube, or it's actually a bioreactor. And so you can give larger doses of the monoclonal antibody at one time, and it works immediately. Whereas with a vaccine, it would require several weeks for you to develop your own immunity against the methamphetamine. The vaccine will work immediately. And so and plus we can give...
You mean the monoclonal antibody works immediately?
Yeah, sorry, the monoclonal antibody can work almost immediately. Plus you can give a lot larger dose, a larger number of molecules of the monoclonal at a single time than your body can make with the vaccine.
And is it also a time difference, like a vaccine? Like I get the flu vaccine, but I need another one in a year, or I get the COVID vaccine, and it's only good for so long.
Yes, we think what we were anticipating, and based on some of our earlier laboratory work, we were thinking that people would need to get at least two doses of a vaccine, like within a month, and then perhaps six months later, get another booster. And we think that would last them for a year or so. And then the next year they would get a booster, and then they would go from there. So not unlike kind of what we did with COVID too, is that, we had the first two or three boosters, and then we got another booster some months down the line. It would not be terribly dissimilar from that.
So let's see if I understand. If you give the vaccine, it takes it longer for your own body to kind of develop the immune response. Yeah. With a monoclonal antibody, I know from giving IV monoclonal antibodies to COVID patients, you know, they leave the ER and they're already feeling better and don't have flu symptoms. It was like instant. It was amazing.
Yes, that's right.
Right. And if you get the COVID shot, you actually don't even know what it's doing for you. It doesn't. Right. Because it's preventative. So how does that work for methamphetamine? Does that mean if you give the monoclonal antibody and I'm high on meth, I'll be immediately back to normal, my heart rate and blood pressure would go back down?
I don't know for sure the answer to that question. We're developing this, to more to block the effects of methamphetamine and keep you from having the good pleasurable effects. And in so doing, we hope that the user can learn then using cognitive behavioral therapy approaches other ways to deal with the stressors and things and the triggers that caused them to take methamphetamine. We have recently completed data collection on a study of our antibody in people with mild to moderate methamphetamine toxicity in emergency department settings. Anecdotally, what it did for most of the people that took it, they did seem to calm down, and they did seem to not quite as agitated. We've just recently stopped data collection on this, and so I really can't say for sure what the overall effects were. But there were a couple of people and a couple of our investigators who commented about one or two of the participants who said it was really interesting that it was like we turned a switch. They came in very agitated and upset, and we gave them the antibody and they calmed down and they felt a whole lot better. And so, again, very little data here, and we really can't make any claims on how this is going to work. But we think that in that setting, it could also work as an antidote against very high dose meth.
But you designed the drug not primarily with that in mind. You wanted to help the craving, and you wanted to prevent the long-term toxic effect. Like
we never thought it was going to do anything for craving.
Okay,
because it does not cross the blood-brain barrier, and it won't go to those sites in the brain that could impact craving. What we hoped was, and what we do hope, is that through reduction of reinforcement of the positive effects of methamphetamine when people take it, because there's a high recidivism rate, just like for much in the substance use world, that they would not be reinforced and not be rewarded for taking the meth. And then over time,
it blocks the effect. So like, I want to use more meth. Right. It's not doing anything for you.
Right. That's right.
Okay. And so it's blocking it. I could see where it'd be really helpful in heart patients. I mean, the people who die of methamphetamine die from cardiac failure. And it's such a problem in California that if I see anybody, 50, even 60 years or younger, and they have heart failure and they have pacemakers and AICDs, I could ask them, is this from methamphetamine? And invariably it's from meth. So it would prevent, like, if that heart patient was getting this monoclonal antibody, it'll at least protect their heart.
Exactly. And in fact, that's one of the next trials that we are starting to talk about, and we've talked to a couple of other groups across the country who might be able to help us with this, is to study this medicine in people with pre-existing cardiac issues from substance use disorder, particularly meth.
That's cool. Well, UC Davis, I believe, has a cardiac clinic just for methamphetamine patients, and then they merge that with addiction treatment. So that may be a great population for you.
Mm-hmm. It is. And there's another one that we've already had some preliminary talk to. They're setting up their own clinic related to this in a different area for that purpose. They're looking at cardiac patients on meth, and they're trying to develop a multidisciplinary approach to treating these folks, and which they're going to have. And it's very exciting to see that going on, because we could very well slide very nicely into that area, because our medicine should have no impact on the cardiac status of the patients. It should be very safe for them, in fact.
Right. And we've shown out of my institution at Scripps, they took patients who were on methamphetamine, mm-hmm. and they showed their heart having lower ejection fraction, less being able to pump. And if they stopped using meth, mm-hmm. they got that function back. Yeah. So there is, yeah. there's definitely hope.
Yeah.
So
again, anecdotally, I've already had a patient in our treatment trial who developed congestive failure and it, you know, at a very young age.
Yep.
And it, you know, hopefully we're going to be able to help him get through this and get on to recover some of his health again.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I think the studies from some Scripps showed that if you stay off meth, you can get heart function back. So that's there's hope for there. So you told us patients come in, they'd get an infusion, an intravenous drug. It would act within, it takes a while for it to work, right? It's not going to be instant.
Not instant, but minutes.
Within minutes.
Yeah.
And it would last for, you were saying, maybe a month or so. A month.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about side effects?
The only side effects that we've seen in the, again, just about 90 people or so who received it, that we can ascribe to the antibody itself, or maybe a little bit of nausea and a little bit of dry mouth. It has been really, like I say, I'm finding some wood to knock on, very safe so far. And we anticipated that. We designed it that way, and we chose the antibody structure because of its low risk of side effects, particularly allergic reactions. And again, because it doesn't interact with any other receptors or bind any other drug, it doesn't cause any effects that way either. And so it has proven so far to be remarkably safe.
That's great. And what about success? How do you know that this product worked? Because that gentleman's heart got better because he wasn't using, because their drug screen is negative for methamphetamine. How do you show this, that it's working? Do people need to be on it for the rest of their lives? Getting like, okay, I got to get my monthly shot of M200.
Good. We hope they don't have to be on it for the rest of their lives. What we're initially, what we're trying to study. So we're doing a trial in people who want treatment for their meth use disorder. And we're measuring a number of outcomes with this, including substance tests. We're actually using saliva tests, but also self-report of meth use, but other things like lifestyle measures. How well do you feel at the end of this? How well do you feel you're functioning? How well do you feel you're interacting with your family again? Ultimately, we would love to have measures of success be that these people can get back into society and hold down jobs and be functional within their families and do the things that they need to do to live productive, happy lives. Unfortunately, right now, we may end up being held to a bar of abstinence. And we're working to try to develop some new ways to measure the effects of treatment for meth use disorder. But right now, abstinence is probably the only one that would result, if we showed that, would result in approval of this medication for wider spread use. So there's, for opioids, I think there are some endpoints that are allowed for things like reduction of longer term effects, like other adverse outcomes, other emergency department admissions, or reduction in drug use. We haven't been able to prove that yet, that those would be good endpoints for our medicine, but we're trying to do that. We strongly feel that the more we can help people reduce their substance use, even if not to zero, the healthier they will be, and the better they will be able to function and do the things that they need to do to be happier and healthier.
Right. So it's really a drug to be used in addiction treatment, right? Maybe not in the emergency department setting as a kind of a
rescue. Yeah, thanks for pointing that out. Yeah, we consider our medicine an adjunct to conventional therapies like cognitive behavioral therapy or contingency management, which I'm sure you've talked about on your podcast in other circumstances. But we think our medicine would be very good in both of those scenarios as a way for the user to know that they've got a backup and they've got something helping them if they do use again. And that's what
kind of like the antabuse for alcohol.
Yeah, except it does it very, very much so.
But it doesn't make you sick.
Cause you to be sick, right? Exactly. That's a good analogy for us. And we hope that the multidisciplinary approach to treatment is the way to go, because these people need support and they need help in a bunch of different ways, not just a shot and all of a sudden they're cured, because that's never going to happen.
Right.
But if we can get them into a program where they can learn to be healthier and learn to eat better and learn to use other coping mechanisms, then we feel like we've been successful. And that's what we're trying to do.
And that's focused on methamphetamine. And we know that about half the methamphetamine supply has fentanyl in it too.
Yes.
So it's not going to help the opiate use disorder.
No.
It was just focused on the methamphetamine.
Right.
We talked on the podcast before with the folks from Clear Scientific that they have a sequestrant. That's more of an emergency drug, right? Somebody who's using a lot and it takes that methamphetamine and takes it out of the body. The monoclonal antibody works differently, right? Different purpose. There's
a little bit. It's there's a lot of similarities between the approaches. Our medicine, the way it works is it, for lack of a better term, is it binds the meth, takes it out of the brain and delivers it to its normal sites of elimination in the liver and the kidney. And we have a bunch of data that supports that hypothesis. And so they're not that dissimilar, but I've seen a lot of the data and presented with the group from ClearSight at the College on Problems and Drug Dependence last summer, in fact, in Minneapolis. And they've got some really good stuff going, and it's exciting to see that work coming to the fore too. The challenge for anybody in getting a medicine approved for use in the emergency department, as you know well, is multifold. Consent from the participants, the uncontrolled nature of what goes on in an emergency department sometimes makes science and research in the ED a bit more challenging. And then, as you have also pointed out, most of these folks have significant emergency events that are cardiac in nature, and bringing them in and getting to them in time to treat them with the medicine is going to be a challenge too. But I really hope that, you know, we can encourage the folks at ClearSight to keep doing what they're doing, because we none of us has this figured out yet.
That's awesome. So you don't see yourselves competitors, you are colleagues together, and there's room for, I think, even more than two different solutions, because the problem's so
absolutely
massive.
But our approach is to get approval for this for treatment of meth use disorder in a more controlled circumstance. We actually think that'll be a little easier way to get the medication approved. And then once it's approved that way, then it'll make it a little easier to study it in more uncontrolled settings. You know, another area that we would love to study at some point is use of our antibody in pregnant women. Mm-hmm. Antibodies are very safe for use in pregnancy. And we think that our medicine could help prevent a meth from reaching the baby before he or she is born. And that would be a big deal. That would help out a lot.
I got a candidate right now in my emergency department. She's 33 yes. weeks pregnant, positive yes. for meth, and
right.
won't let us even monitor her baby.
Yeah.
Very psychotic, mm-hmm. And would be a great candidate.
We would love to study that, and we have explored this. It's just, again, the logistical challenges of studying pregnant people with meth use disorder they're not small. And so that's why we've taken this approach. We're going to try to get our medicine approved for use in meth use disorder, and then go to study it more in emergency department settings and in the pregnancy models and in other approaches where we think it could have some benefit.
It's interesting because it does, like, just dealing with this one patient in our emergency department. Again, she's living in our emergency department because we don't have placement for her in a community. The ethics of that, I don't even know if she'd allow for M2000 because she wouldn't even allow us to put monitors on her. And then you have do we listen to her consent or the, right, you know, the person who doesn't have, the fetus who can't give or not give consent. So it's very difficult.
Right. One of the nice things about an antibody is that, like I said, they are proven to be safe in pregnancy. And I think once we got an approval in other circumstances, I think it would make it a little easier to use in that circumstance. Yeah.
Awesome. So you've done phase 1, phase 2 trials. Where are you at with getting this? How soon can I start using?
I would love to tell you that it's imminent. We're probably still several years away because, again, we're doing
that's not fast enough.
I know it's not. And we're working very hard at this. We have to finish the current treatment trial. It's called Outlast. You can actually read about it at outlaststudy.com. Okay. And we're doing this. It's going on at 10 sites across the country. And we're about halfway through recruitment for this trial, and it's going to take us another several months to get there, and then analyze those data, and then we'll come up with some new endpoints that we can study in another phase 2 that we think will help us get approval for this medication for broader use. Then we'll have to do that'll require another phase 2 study at that point. And then when we show that success in that one, then we can do the first of 2 phase 3 studies, which will be much bigger studies, many more people across the country. And so by the time we do all that, we think it could take another 5 to 8 years to get to that.
No, we don't have 5 of 8 years. I mean, wow. I mean, we had Operation Warp Speed for COVID. Why don't we have that for methamphetamines?
Mm-hmm. Good question. There is... NIH is remarkably generous and has been remarkably supportive of our program. Finding other industry partners who are interested in putting money into this has been a challenge, and we've looked. We believe that there is still a substantial bias out there against substance use disorder as being something that is more of a social ill than a medical problem. And so the funding from private industry for this is just, it's not available. We've looked in several different circumstances, and it's, I think that would be the only way that we could move faster than what we've done. We've been very fortunate to have had a phenomenal partner in the National Institute on Drug Abuse for our entire program. Everything we've ever done has been funded by NIH and NIDA in particular, and we're grateful for that. But we're then bound by the timing, the grant cycle timing that takes several months to apply for a grant, get the grant, do the work, get the data, apply for the grant, do the grant, and that cycle takes a while. In addition, I will have to say that recruiting this population is very challenging. There are a lot of people with meth use disorder out there, but as you've already pointed out, a lot of these people are also using opioids. We're not at a point in our development where we really can study people with significant opioid use disorder too. And so we're going to have to do this. It requires incremental steps to get there, and we're working through it, but it's going to be a few more years.
So explain the process. By the way, that's very disappointing. But
yes, it is.
I thought after phase 2, you can't, and FDA passes that, you can't start using the drugs. You have to go through. Tell us the phases at what point we can safely start using it.
So we're doing phase two now, and then, which is really, it's where you show the first evidence of effectiveness of a medication in addition to continuing to show safety. For instance, we're going to recruit 120 patients into our current phase two trial. We anticipate another phase two of about that same size would be required to go back to FDA and work with them on developing the plan for the larger phase three trials, which could require as many as 300 people each. And so by the time the phase three is where you actually, once you get positive data and you show that it's safe in a phase three, then the FDA can evaluate for whether or not it could be used for emergency use authorization, or it would need another phase three, or there'd be other work that would need to be done to prove that it would be effective. So it's just a long process, particularly when we have to do it in such a stepwise manner. We don't have a lot of extra money to throw at these. These are expensive trials.
And so right now, all this research is being done by Intervection. And the plan is for it to be sold to another big pharmaceutical company to use at what, who will then push us through, or how does that work?
Yes, that would be our goal. We're hoping to show evidence of effectiveness in this current phase two trial. We will continue to work with throughout the country and the world to try to find a partner who would be interested in purchasing it or licensing it and moving it with somebody with deeper pockets than we have. I mean, we're five people. We're a small pharmaceutical development company that was developed out of the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences. We came from the UAMS incubator program. And so we don't have the infrastructure to move this much past phase two, and so we will have to get some help from a bigger company. But we need to have more positive data in order to do that, and that's what we're working on developing now.
Very cool. Well, wow. Again, we need you yesterday.
So we're trying. And we're optimistic. I mean, the more we see of this, the more we think it's going to work. But it just takes these people are very challenging to recruit. Finding sites across the country to do these trials are difficult. And the folks we're working with are great, and they're doing everything they can. But for instance, one of our sites says, you know, they schedule to screen about three people a day for our trial. Maybe less than one of those shows up every other day. And then maybe one out of five actually qualifies for the trial. So even though there's a lot of people using meth, our ability to recruit them into our trials is difficult because of their other issues and of some of the constraints.
You need a compliant patient. And by nature, someone who has a chronic methamphetamine use disorder is not a compliant patient.
Exactly. And so we just have to remain persistent and keep doing this because we believe in it.
Well, thank you for doing that. We definitely need you. We support you, help you any way we can. And anything else our listeners need to know about monoclonal antibodies and vaccines for methamphetamines?
Yeah, good question. We've talked about all the different, a lot of different approaches and the things that are concerning to us. I think that the main thing is that we really believe that this is a medical illness and not an illness, not a social ill. And we believe that the more we can do to develop new medications, the more we can help these folks. And the reason what I'm getting to is that we think by seeing meth use disorder as a medical illness, it's kind of like diabetes when it was first recognized. There weren't really any good treatments at that point either. But as insulins were developed and as they became better and better, more people took advantage of them and took them and realized that they were successful, we think if we can get a medicine out there and start to help people, that we can learn more about what these folks need. And by treating some of them and treating them successfully, then we can learn more and more about what these people need to help them. And then we can, it'll all kind of build on itself. And so that's what we're trying to do. We know that we're working uphill, and we're doing something that nobody else is doing. And it's and we know that it's a big challenge, but we've been at it for a long time and we're not quitting anytime soon.
That's great. Well, well said, Dr. Gentry. People who have a substance use disorder definitely deserve treatment with compassion and without stigma for their chronic brain disorder that deserves help. And again, the diabetes analogy is wonderful.
It's we think so too. Outlaststudy.com. And if your listeners do it, because we have sites across the country, if they're looking for help, they can check out that site. And then we are recruiting. And
Say it one more time. Tell us what it is. I'll put it also in your show notes.
Outlaststudy.com.
Outlaststudy.com. All right. I will have that on our show notes.
Great.
And I want to say thank you to Jay. Thank you for your question and for your magical problem-solving abilities in the emergency department. Maybe we could just have Jay solve all the methamphetamine problems since he's solving these other problems for me. I want to say thank you, Dr. Gentry. You bring another type of magic to the emergency department and to the issue of substance use disorder. And I can't wait to start using IXT-M200 or whatever the new name will be.
We hope you can do that soon.
Thank you for listening to High Truths on Drugs and Addiction, where national experts bring you facts and answer your questions. This week's episode would not be possible without the generous support of our sponsor. A sincere and warm thank you to ISAC, the International Academy on the Science and Impact of Cannabis, doctors educating on the harms of marijuana. Visit isaac1.org, that's ISIC1.org, to view their library that translates medical journals for public understanding, listen to their speaker series, and follow the science on marijuana. High Truth producer is Dave Rivas from Davey Boy Productions. I am your host, Dr. Oneet Lev. We hope we brought your day a little bit more High Truths.